Let's start with questions, and if we're a little bit short on that, I'll jump right into some marketing stuff. Questions? Yes, ma'am. Number one piece of advice for starting from scratch. Are you married?
Yes.
Okay. The number one piece of advice is to make sure your spouse is on the same page as you are.
And if not, then what?
If not, change your mission until you are on the same page. No, don't leave him. In my book, You Can Farm, I have a chapter that the number one reason farms fail is not mechanics, logistics, location, marketing, or anything. It's disagreement among the stakeholders as to the mission, direction, where you're going to head. One maybe that's extremely gregarious, wants to do direct marketing. The other, well, we bought this farm so I could come here and not see anybody. That's a big difference. And a lot of farmers buy farms in order to not see anybody. And then if it's successful and we've got 50 people a day coming out here and buying stuff, the gregarious storyteller schmoozer is, this is great. And the other guy, he's dying because all these people are swarming over my hammock when I'm out here trying to take a nap in the afternoon. So those kinds of things. Starters and finishers. If one of you is a starter and the other one's a finisher, the clutter that the starter one creates drives the other one crazy. How much clutter is acceptable? How many unfinished projects can there be? Lifestyle. Some people come to this as a way to hunker down and subsist and live in thrift store clothes and, darn their socks and duct tape their gloves. And others come to this as a lord of the manor. And we're going to have, maids and servants, and we're going to, have afternoon tea at 1:30. And those are big deals. How many nights out do we have to go eat out? All right? One just wants to, stay at home and subsist. The other one is be around town and wants to be in the garden clubs and all this. And this is big stuff because it affects the fuel price, the miles on the vehicle, and ultimately the what kind of a house. Says, hey, to be successful farming, we got to cut our expenses. Let's live in a yurt. The other one says, I'm the child of a surgeon. We don't live in yurts. And these differences in perceptions, they got to be talked through. You've got to just deal with that. A big one is, what if one of them is a vegan and the other one wants to do pasture-based livestock? I've met those kind of people before, and I scratch my head. How in the world can they go down this path? How can a vegan sell grass-finished beef? I'm sorry, it doesn't compute for me. How do you cook this steak? Well, I'm a vegan. Well, that really gives you credibility with a customer. So these kinds of things have to be dealt with. That would be my number one piece of advice. Once you're on the same page, if you get headed the right direction, man, you can turn the world upside down. But boy, if you're fighting each other, bleeding off your energy to each other, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Good. Another question, anything? Yes?
You talked about you're adding vegetables to your farm, and you've got a guy coming back, an apprentice. Mm-hmm. How does that relationship work? He's on your land. Does he sell to you, or do you share the crop?
Oh, great, great, great. Let me discuss this, because it has to do with how do you begin to scale And how do you create opportunity, autonomous opportunity, and yet, you know, protect yourself maybe from being run over a little bit or taken advantage of. So, you know, those are all real important balances. So let me tell you how that works. Essentially, Dan wanted to come back to us, and so by this time, it's a pretty big crew, and so what we did was present to him the idea of becoming an on-farm chef so that we could have communal meals, because Teresa and Sherry, my wife and Daniel's wife, were starting to chafe a little bit under the meal routine of all these interns and apprentices all the time. It's a lot of cooking. And of course, me being the gregarious storyteller schmoozer in the family, I like people and community and communal eating and fellowship and a big table, you know, and lots of activity. And so so what we did, but the ladies didn't like that because it was too much work and it's too confining. So here's what we did. We said, well, Dan, what do you think you can do? So here's what we came up with. From June 1 to October 1, when we have the interns, six interns, that's just a four-month program. The apprentices are year-round. There's two or three of them, depending on if we have two or three. And then there's six interns and up to eight. And June 1 to August 1, or October 1, so 4 months. So he cooks an evening meal for everybody. We put some money in Daniel's basement and kind of created a big kitchen in there. So he cooks for everybody the evening meal, which is about 20 of us in all of Daniel's family, all of Teresa and I, our family, all the interns, all the apprentices.
Get your battery going out. Does this one work?
Yeah, it works.
I'll replace the batteries in that one.
Okay. Is this on? Is this on? It's not on.
No.
Something happened.
You just talk loud for a couple minutes, and I'll put me back.
Yeah, I can talk loud. Can y'all hear me? If you can't, just move right on up. All right? I'll move up here a little bit. In fact, I like the natural voice anyway. This is the last talk I have to do of the day, so if I burn out at this session, it doesn't matter. I don't have to say anything more today. So what we did was we created a $15,000 remunerative thing. He wanted to take over the gardens and do the vegetables. So I said, okay, we'll pay $7,500 for the vegetables that you produce on our land, and $7,500 for the 4 months of Monday through Friday meals. Okay, that's half ingredient, half labor. All right, that's kind of the way restaurants work anyway. So 50-50 there. So $15,000. And then he is growing four kinds of mushrooms. So I cut him some logs to grow his mushrooms on. Some grow in logs, some don't. So he's put his spawn in and growing his mushrooms, which will be harvested now as the weather cools off and the end of the fall. And then he also took over Daniel's rabbit operation, which he is growing, expanding to about 100 does, which should generate an additional about $10,000. So when you add the 15, the 10, and 5 from produce, and whatever he doesn't grow that we don't eat or can, he's supposed to grow our stuff that we want to can as well, then he has the freedom to sell. And so the plan is that he'll generate, with them and the mushrooms, that he'll generate at least $30,000 of income. And so there's no rent, there's no lease. He's just there on our land. We give him an intern as necessary. If he has a special, you know, planting, weeding, harvesting thing, we give him some extra labor. Of course, we have ponds. He's got irrigation if he needs it, the ponds that we've already built. If he needs a front end loader to haul in a bunch of compost for some beds he's putting in, the tractor's there. So that's kind of where we are. So he essentially designed his own salaried position from what he wanted to do, and it's working beautifully. We just had a kind of mid-season conference last week with he and his wife, and they are ecstatic. Just ecstatic. He said, when I came, I thought about, you know, coming for 3 or 4 years and then I'd go somewhere else. He said, now I think Tina and I might just retire here. So we're just thrilled to death. And so one of our interns from this year, Bree, she approached us and said, I've really enjoyed the livestock, but I really appreciate what Dan's doing. I'd like to apprentice with him next year. And so now, next year, he's going to have his own apprentice. And she's gonna be apprenticing for him, and for us, she's gonna take over the buying club computer work from Sherry as a salaried position. So she'll be a part-time salary, part-time apprentice for Dan in the vegetables. So we're all about.
You probably don't want it back, but I got it working.
Okay, thank you. So we are all about trying to let these young people. Personally customize and write their own deal. We have an intern from this summer who wants to stay on.
Sure.
Yeah. Who wants to stay on. And, is it okay? I'm just going to do this. Is that all right? She wants to stay on. Thanks for the effort, though. she wants to stay on. And so we said, well, you've been here now. Close to 3 months, what would you like to do? And so she said, well, I'm a very organized person. I love organization. And so could I take over the freezer inventory, all of the coolers? We have about 200 coolers because we don't have a refrigerated truck. We use a bus, that bus instead, and it's a much cheaper vehicle. And so we put our money in coolers rather than refrigeration units, which are very expensive to maintain. So she said, I'll do that. And she's going to become the project manager next summer on all of the broilers and all of the hogs. So we don't have to think about them at all. Dana and I don't have to do any responsibilities with pigs and hogs. Now, she can get help, but she's... The point is, she's the responsible one. And Bree and Kristen are going to live together in Daniel Sherry's basement so they can live cheap and eat with the crew so they don't have any living expenses. They don't have to drive to work. And therefore, the cash can be relatively low. We leverage our sawmill and our construction ability and our food, okay? And so the cash is low, so they nor we have to pay a lot of taxes, but she'll get the equivalent of about a $25,000 to $27,000 a year salary doing these things that we need done as project manager and authority on these certain things. So she essentially carved out, here's what I'd like to do, and created a position for herself. And so that's what we're about, is trying to create opportunities where these young people, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme that we really want to hold around, tell us what you want to do. And they can carve out, they can create then their own salaried position. Okay? It's taken as much energy and creativity to move this forward as it did to develop the original prototypes in the first place, because you've got all these relationships, you've got these individual gifts and talents and interests, and how do we leverage those, and how do we compensate, and what do we do? So every single one is a very customized thing, but it's extremely autonomous as to them saying, here's where I would like to fit in there. And then that creates an opportunity for us. One of the things we're looking at right now is, do we want to, because we've got all these elementary schools calling for field trips for elementary kids. We have never done that. And we're wrestling with, do we want to do that? And if we decide that we want to let that move forward, then we'll go to the crew and say, we are ready to say yes if somebody wants to volunteer to be in charge of this. For example, our previous apprentice manager, Matt, began doing tours last year And so now he's become our official tour guide, and we split everything 50-50. So he's carved out, he's actually moved away from the farm. Now he lives in Maryland, 3 hours away, but he's carved out 2 days a month, 8 months in a year, so 16 days, two slots per day, 10 to 12 or 1 to 3, and people can come for a personal tour for $500. Matt leads them, and we cost and we split that 50-50. He keeps half of it, we keep half of it. So he drives down 3 hours, spends the night with us. You know, we got a spare bedroom, right? Spends the night with us, and he can go home with $1,000 in his pocket. It's a nice little, you know, 16 times 250 is going to be $8,000. A nice little pad for him, a part-time deal. He gets to maintain his relationship with us. We get to handle tours that we don't have the manpower to handle. It's win-win. And he carved that out. He made, this is what I can do, and this is what I'd like to do. And so that's what we're doing. And when those 16 splot, when those, no, it's actually, it's 16 days times two. So when those 32 spots fill up, then we're out for the year. You have to wait till next year. So, so we're just trying to be real fluid and not have all the bases covered and tell everybody what they have to do. You come and tell us what you like to do. Make us an offer. Okay? And it's really working well. On the rental farms, the farms that we lease, Amanda was a former intern. She wanted to take over the Blue House. I won't bore you with all the details. This is a 240-acre farm. And so she really liked doing the eggs. So she is taking care of about 1,500 layers in two eggmobile pairs over there. In other words, two sets of eggmobiles. That's her main thing. Last year, she did about 15 broiler shelters. We brooded them, took the birds over there. It's real close. And then picked them up and brought them back and processed them and just paid her a per saleable bird flat rate on every saleable bird. We pay her a per dozen flat rate on every dozen. We own the chickens, the eggmobiles, buy the feed. She moves them, takes care of them, packs the eggs, and gets a flat rate per dozen. But this landlord is the first landlord that's allowed us to add pigs, because he's got this big crop field that's registered as a crop field, so he doesn't care if that field gets torn up because it's registered with the NRCS as a crop field. So we carved out that 10 acres, and Amanda said, you know, pulling those shelters is a little bit hard on my wrists, and so I'd like to trade pigs for broilers. So this year, she's not doing the broilers, and instead did the pigs. And so she gets free housing, big garden spot, doesn't have to drive to work, and that's a big deal. Not having to drive to work, you know, in the course of a year, not driving to work is not only a huge thing in time, but in money, especially where we are, where people take the metro and they've got to pay for parking. A lot of people will spend $15 a day in their, you know, getting to work. Well, times 5 days a week, that's $75 in a week. You know, 50 weeks in a year, you've suddenly just spent $4,000 just getting to work. That's huge, right? So the bottom line is that last year and this year, she worked just 8 months, okay, and got cash of a little over, well, last year was $22,000, this year will probably be about $21,000, but anyway, well over $20,000 in 8 months, and had free housing, free food, and didn't have to drive to work. It's equivalent to about a $32,000, and that's in 8 months. Okay? The winter, she just took off, went home to see her family for a month, and then she knitted stuff she learned how to knit, and then she took a Rosetta Stone, I think, foreign language thing, and just took the winter, just you know, chilled out. Okay? So we're all about bringing that intellectual agrarian and the white collar salary to the farm. We're tired of this hillbilly redneck just get by subsistence farm deal. We want people, we want to get the best and brightest on farms. Why do the best and brightest, you know, all the A and B students, they all go to town and become attorneys and doctors and accountants and, you know, these high-paid jobs. And as a culture, we have stereotypically reserved our air, soil, and water stewardship to the dummies. I can still remember like yesterday when I was going into the 12th grade, the last day I ever went into the guidance counselor at school, she went into apoplectic seizures when I told her I wanted to be a farmer. She says, and waste all those brains? We had a couple ladies come into sales building a month ago. I was there with two of our apprentices. And these two couples came in and their BMW, you know, and these gals were clearly, you know, high society, blue blood, coiffed. They'd been to the beauty saloon, you know, and they were high society. And they walked in the sales building, you know, we started talking about 5 minutes. All of a sudden, one of them just kind of stopped and startled. And she looked at me and she says, "You guys are really articulate." Why would you want to be farmers? I said, "Well, you don't really be act, you know." I mean, come on. And so we are all about creating an income opportunity that will attract the best and brightest. Because we think that that is where we're going to get our air, soil, and water resources nurtured, massaged, and stewarded the best. Okay? Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Good. Okay, another question. I don't always give short answers because everything relates to everything. So, yes, ma'am.
Do you do farm consulting?
Do we do farm consulting? I used to do more of that, but I don't do much anymore because I find it very frustrating. If you can afford me, you won't listen to what I say because you're too rich. And if you can't afford me, you need to just start and learn by doing. But I do some a little bit yet, but I have one rate. It's the same rate as I do today. You're paying for time, okay? And so if you want me to come and consult and it's the same amount as this, you know, it's fine. And all that can be seen on the website. But, you know, let me tell you this with regards to that. This learning curve is real. And you're going to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, you've heard the saying, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. Ever heard that? That's wrong. If it's worth doing right, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly first. Because nobody does it right at first. I mean, the way you and I as adults approach creativity and innovation and new things would be equivalent to a toddler. We're at a house, you know, we're with friends, and they've got a toddler, or our toddler, and the toddler, you know, she comes up, you know, to the chair, and she, you know, pulls herself up here, you know, in her diaper, and she kind of sizes you up, and the next thing you know, she falls down in her diaper, fortunately. And it would be as if all the adults standing there said, "Well, Marianne, if you can't walk any better than that, just quit." What do we do, though? We say, "Oh, look, she's standing up. She's trying to stand. She's trying to..." You know, we get all goo-goo, gaga-eyed over her attempt. But see, we don't bring that kind of forgiveness. Thank you. Yeah, we don't bring that to the kitchen if we've never canned. We don't bring it to our cows if we've never had cows. We don't bring it to our garden if we've never made a garden. We're all locked up, aren't we? About, oh, what if the bugs get the beans? What if the cows get out? What if, you know, what if? And we're not, our crisis is not a crisis of capital or a crisis of knowledge. Our crisis is a crisis of imagination. See? To imagine what's possible and imagine what we can do and just be like a toddler and just and go for it. See, that's where we need to head. Question. There was a, yes.
You keep talking about the next generation. Do all your kids work on the farm? The question is, do all our kids work on a farm? No, we have two. Daniel does, and Rachel doesn't. She does some things for us as a subcontractor, but she is in Maryland, and she's our artsy, craftsy, woo, you know, so she does all my PowerPoints, and she's actually developed a note card line with Polyface Pictures note cards that we sell in 12 packs, and they're going extremely well. People buy them. And we've told the kids from day one, we're not pushing you to be on the farm. You know, it's fine with us for you not to be on the farm. But I have also said, if you don't want to be on the farm, you're not going to inherit it. Okay? Because there's nothing worse than giving resources to somebody that doesn't appreciate it. I've actually got a stack of letters on my desk, some of which are from elderly farmers saying, could you please find me a young person to inherit my farm to? Because my kids don't want it. I had a prisoner from up in Pennsylvania. I correspond with prisoners. I've had a policy from day one that anytime I get a letter from a prisoner, an inmate, wanting information, I send them all my books free. I just hate jails. I think they're atrocious. I think they're a scab on society. We should have whipping posts and dunking booths, and you know, maybe a little bit of slavery would be good too. You know, ankle bracelets, and you've got to be a slave to the person you robbed until it's all paid back. I'm a believer in remuneration, so I'm not soft on crime, but I'm not into jails. Don't do anything. I mean, that would be like telling your children, take a 2-week timeout. You don't learn anything with a 2-week timeout. You know, you apply a Board of Education to the seat of knowledge, and then you go on about your way. Okay? I'm from the old school. Didn't hurt me any. I think it's great. I enjoyed last night, you know, in the hotel. We don't have a TV, so when I go away, I get to, you know, Mayberry RFD, you know, Andy Griffith. And you know you're getting older when the only TV shows you enjoy watching are brought to you by D-Pens, the scooter store, and Viagra. And you know, it was amazing to watch Andy Griffith tell Opie that he needed a spanking. I thought, boy, have times changed today. Now, if you do that in a supermarket, you'd be get turned into social services for child abuse. A lot of kids need it that don't get it, I can tell you that right now. Anyway, where was I going with this? Prisoners. Yeah. Okay. So he's getting ready to get released out of prison. He wrote me back and he said, I think that prisons are just places where people go to rot. You know, that they should be severely punished and then, you know, let loose. Give you immediately. I really have a soft spot for these guys and gals, and so he's getting released. So he wrote a letter. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania. He wrote a letter to four farmers that he knew from the community where he grew up, and he said he's getting released. He wanted to farm this way. Is there any way that he could use a little bit of their land? All four elderly farmers wrote him back. I mean, that's amazing in itself, that they wrote him back. I mean, you know, like handwritten, like, a letter, okay, wrote him back and said, every one of them said, absolutely, please come and use my farm because my kids don't want it. So we make our way, we make our place, and there's opportunity out there. So let's go for it. I don't even remember what the question was now, but I hope I answered it. Did I answer the question? What was the question? Oh, my kids were involved. Yeah. So you know, we didn't force them, but we made it very clear that this farm was going to survive, and if they wanted to be involved, fine. And if they didn't, that's fine too. But we'd go find young people to make it go. We love the land that much. We're not going to just, you know, get old with it with nobody around. We love being surrounded by young people that I can then take my experience and leverage and say, go do this, and it gets done. And I can sit and think about what was being done. Yes.
Well, you know, like nowadays, like, you know, we have a swap shop thing, and I've gotten on there numerous times asking for help. Call, you know, high school kids come out, pull weeds, and blah, blah, blah. And you just can't, they just don't want to work.
No.
So, I mean, how do you get young kids, or are you just so well populated they're just all willing, or do you have.
Oh, no.
I mean, how do you get them in there?
No, well, our young people come from all over the country. It's a broad, you know, it's a big brush. Yeah, they're few and far between. Because most of them are being told that, you know, calluses are for rednecks. You know, and if you're smart, you have little, you know, baby behind hands because with little calluses on your fingertips because all you've done is just sit here and punch little numbers, you know, all day. Yes? Great, thank you. Now, that's a great question. I think where you're going is the question is labor. How do you get? How do you build this labor pool? And if you don't mind me taking some liberty with the question, I think part of it is simply how do you get partners? How do you build partners? How do you build this team, this agrarian team? How do you build this thing? Okay. Well, first of all, you have to employ yourself. And right before you drop dead, that's when you bring on your first partner. I mean, you know, not right after you drop dead, right before. Okay? And what I'm trying to get to is you've got to go all out to create enough inertia, enough movement and inertia to be attractive to somebody. People aren't going to come to a ship that's sitting there going nowhere. Dad used to always tell me, people still love to go see burning bushes. And he said, to us, every bush should be a burning bush. And that's what I'm trying to get. People are still attracted to movement, to people that are going places. And so, and that's exactly why, you know, of this year, of six of our interns, four of them want to stay around. They say, why? Because they want to be on a ship that's going somewhere. Okay? They want to be where there's leadership, where there's mission, where there's passion and direction and excitement and enthusiasm to go someplace. So you have to be enthusiastic, all right? And you have to build movement in your business that's positive. You can't be like so many farmers that I run into that want to stay, well, I don't want no help. I got this farm so I could be a, you know, out here on the back 40 by myself. I don't want to see nobody. It's going to be me and Matilda and nobody. That's not going to attract anybody. Okay? Now, I'm not saying we need to have stars in our eyes and say, I want to be a Tyson either. Okay? But we do need to have a mission, a vision that we can articulate, a story that we can articulate and be moving aggressively in that direction. I mean, aggressively. And that tends to attract young people. If they think there's opportunity, I really believe that a lot of not just young people, middle-aged people, all sorts of people, actually would have liked to have farmed or would like to farm if they actually thought that there was a salary there. Every day we have 50-year-old couples coming through. Oh, if I had just thought that it was possible, I would have done it. But everybody told them they were nuts. You know, there ain't no money in farming. Or only dummies farm, or whatever, okay? So you've got to create movement. Now, what's number one? Number two is, They have to feel ownership. Ownership, in a lot of ways, is more valuable than money. People love to feel like they've got some autonomy, like they can make some decisions. I'm a great delegator. That's one of my gifts. I love delegation. I love to teach somebody and then turn my back and say, okay, it's your baby now, and walk away and never think about it again. I enjoy doing that. Daniel is an extremely good manager. And so we work real, because I'm an innovator and he's a manager. So, you know, I say, I have the idea, and then he implements it, you know. And there was a period of time in his life when he went through about 4 years of almost resenting that, from about 18 to 22. You know, Mark Twain said it was amazing how much my dad learned between, you know, when I was 18 and 22. And Daniel went through that just a little bit too, where my new ideas, he started resenting because I'd come back with these new ideas, and then he was the guy that, you know, that put it together. And now, you know, he's 29. And now he's desperately hoping that one of his kids, they've got three, we've got three grandchildren, that one of them will get my innovative genes, because he's scared, concerned, not scared, concerned, that if none of them does, Polyface will not be on the cutting edge anymore, because he's a manager and not the innovator. Now, he has some great ideas. I'm not saying it doesn't mean, but from, you know, big vision stuff, you know, to move it a different direction. So you've got to create autonomy. I ran into an elderly couple, not an elderly couple, late middle age. They were late 50s in Indiana, and they wanted to be on the farm full time. And so they started these pastured poultry, and he had actually gotten laid off from his 27-year sales job. And so it was a very opportune time for them to make a life change and start something. So they started this pastured poultry thing. Well, I mean, he could sell a hat rack to a moose. I mean, the guy can just sell anything. He's well-liked in his community. And so, I mean, their pastured poultry thing just took off. He called me after the second year. They'd already done like 4,000 just the second year, which is much faster than I encourage people to do. He said, man, we've never made so much money, but I've never been so tired. So we created, he had a couple high school boy neighbors, boys that were interested. So we created a plan in which these two high school brothers, neighbors, would come over and do all of the physical work. They could triple their production. He could basically do all the marketing and run it on royalties. Split the difference half and half. The bottom line was that his income was going to double. These two boys could make $20,000 in a summer, divided in half, $10,000 apiece, which is pretty good for high school summer labor, okay, apiece. And he didn't have to tote one bucket of water or one bag of feed or gut one chicken. So what we've got to do is create these symbiotic relationships, and be willing to, as the older generation, to back off and realize that if we really create a niche that the young people can run with, if we just run it like an annuity royalty deal, we're gonna be fine. And besides, I don't need to make any money. You know, the house is paid for. Shoot. I mean, we've been below the poverty level all of our life. I mean, from the IRS standpoint, okay? But of course, you know, Polyface pays for our car, our electricity, our phone, our clothes, our, you know, so there's not much left. Our insurance. So we don't have to make much money. And I don't want to make much money. If I make a bunch of money, then the government gets a bunch of it. So I'd just as soon stay below the poverty line and give that money to the young people. So people say, well, so how do you work with Daniel? I mean, how do you keep these young people on the farm? Basically, I've got this little, you know, short answer. Whatever he wants, he gets. I mean, what's wrong with that? You know, whatever the young person wants, they get. Now, you got to train them early. You know, the joy of our lives was that both of our kids started with their entrepreneurial activities early. You know, Rachel did her pound cakes and zucchini bread and these little loom potholder things, you know? Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the up the wazoo. Of course, she's real, you know, artistic and creative and all, so she had these wild colors and all this. And I mean, you know, when this little, you know, 6-year-old is sitting in the sales building, cherubically looking up, you know, want to buy a potholder, I mean, how can you say no, you know? So anyway, so they did this. She made potpourri. She did all this stuff. Daniel had his rabbits. And both of our kids, when they hit 20 years old, had $20,000 in the bank that they had earned. It was not allowance. Which means, A, that we paid them They earned it. They carved their own niches. But they were also frugal. Because most teens would just go out and spend it. And so those kids learned to let me, I'll tell you one more story you might appreciate. So Daniel was about 12. We're heading to church. And we believe that more is caught than taught. And so, you know, we just try to live it. And he said, I've got to get some more. I've got to ramp up this rabbit production thing. I said, oh, why? He said, well, because my tithe jar ran empty. And I thought, wow, what a great reason to want to be in business, to keep your tithe jar full. Is that cool or what? See, we hadn't said, but he knew how we did, and so he just caught that. So to me, that's an example of just stewardship, and that starts really early. And we didn't give him stuff. We didn't give allowances. We didn't. There are things that you do because you're a human, and then there are things that you do because you're you. You get compensated for those, but you don't get compensated for the stuff that you do because you're a part of society, like, you know, taking out the trash and chores type things, that you clean your room. Okay, that's, you do that because you're a human. You don't do that because you're you. And so that's how you create this movement that then is attractive to people to come and join you. Okay, good. Thank you for the question. Yes. Great question. Interns, do we pay? All right. We have a huge separation between our interns and our apprentices. The apprentices are 12 months, and they get paid a minimum, and they get room and board, plus $200 a month stipend, which can go as high as $800 at the end if we deem them worthy. Okay? And if we don't, it stays $200 the whole time. But the really good ones absolutely can leave us with $5,000 in their pocket. Again, they don't have to drive to work. They get free room and board. You know, what do they have to spend on? They don't have much to spend on. The interns, that's a different ball game. That's 4 months. So the problem with interns is that they're only there 4 months, and it takes a while to become productive. And people, it's funny when people say, oh, you're profitable because you got all this free help. Let me tell you about free help. So this summer, Daniel's out at the shop, and he tells Matt, one of the apprentices, to go hook up the feed buggy, and we're going to go feed these pigs. So Daniel's trying to get some stuff together in the shop. Next thing he knows, he hears this crunch, turns around, and here Matt hooked up to the feed buggy, and wasn't paying attention, and broke into the pole that holds up the equipment shed. Well, guess what was the job for the rest of the day? Digging out the old pole, taking it apart from all the braces and the roofing and the rafters and the girts, and replacing the pole and propping up the roof, and okay. I'll tell you about free help. You know, I can keep you going for stories for a couple of hours on free help. The reason college is expensive is because education is expensive. All right? And so we are offering this educational opportunity. And what we tell say about the apprentices is it takes them 4 months to, they cost us money for the first 4 months. They break even in the next four, and then we make money on them the last four. Well, the interns aren't there long enough for that cycle to occur, okay? And the other thing is that we invest in these interns. I mean, we've rented a duplex apartment thing in Middlebrook, 10 minutes away. The girls are upstairs. The guys are downstairs. That's $7,000 for all of them to stay free. We feed them all free. So, you know, they don't have much expenses, and then we give them $100 stipend a month. So then, you know, they can buy peanut butter, go to the laundry, go to a movie if they want to. We don't want this to cost them a bunch, but we also give them a lot of in-kind stuff. Now, the other things that we do are a lot of sweet things for them. For one thing, one of the things that we've found is their favorite thing is my monthly lecture. I do a 2-hour lecture of their choosing. They bring the topic to me, Then I do a lecture for 2 hours just for the... They love it. They eat it up. We do a whiteboard and we diagram. We do economics. We do, you know, grass growth curves. And I show them how, I plan the grazing management, all this stuff. So they like that. Another thing we do is we do some field trips. You know, we'll go places. We'll go to a produce auction. We'll go to the Federal Inspected Slaughterhouse and do a tour. We go to the county fair, and I pay for them to all come, get in free and all that. So we do that as a group, And so there are a lot of things that we do that are kind of quasi-educational in kind that are I call pot sweeteners, things like that. So that's the intern deal. And then beyond that, essentially, we view the apprentice intern program. We started it, 20 years ago to train young people and now go out and do likewise. Well, now, as we've grown in the business, now we see it more as a vetting opportunity to then pick the creme de la creme and offer an opportunity, or they come to us. So what we do is, in about halfway of the season, in one of our sessions, we'll say, okay, guys, we're halfway through the season. If anybody wants to stick around or wants to stay or do something, tell us. And so, this year, I call them kids, started coming to us and given us there. And so then we went back and so we conducted roughly 2 to 3 hour interviews with every single one of them, like six of them, to discuss, what do you want to do? What do you want to bring to the table? How much do you need to make? What's your situation? And that takes a lot of time. And that's one of the reasons farmers don't like to do this, is because farmers are so relationally challenged. That's why they like their farms, because cows are always happy to see you. People bring you all these problems. They bring you these perceptions and misunderstandings, right? But, the chickens are always, I always say, I'm coming out with a new book in 2 weeks. It'll be available. You can already pre-order it on Amazon. The title is The Sheer Ecstasy of Being a Lunatic Farmer. And one of my ecstasies is that I get to go out every morning and make these hundreds and hundreds of beings happy. But people are never that happy to see me. See? And so farmers tend to shy away from the kind of stuff I'm describing because they don't want the hassle. That sounds complicated. It's a complicated life. Well, yeah, it is. But you want to grow to be an old grouchy guy that's 70 years old and doesn't have anybody to help hold a fence post to put it in? Or do you want to be surrounded by your adoring grandchildren and or children and or other unrelated young people that just think you're the best thing since sliced bread? I'll pick the latter, thanks. Okay? And it's also a way to get a lot of stuff done. I mean, when I've got these, nine young people plus Daniel sitting there, ready to jump off the cliff for me, man, oh man, you talk about getting stuff done. I mean, you three go here, you three go here, you four go here, and boom, I mean, we turn the world upside down, okay? And so there's an energy there, there's an enthusiasm that we can leverage on the farm now that just simply, makes it even go better. But you have your bumps in the road. One of our leased farms this summer, we had a former intern and his family come to run that as a satellite operation, growing for us and growing for themselves and to sell and everything. Make a long story short, it didn't work out, and he and his wife decided mid-season. Unbeknownst to us, they'd been working for about 6 weeks trying to figure out an exit strategy. They finally called Daniel and I, and we thought there was something going on there, and we could just sense it. And anyway, sat us down and said, we're going to leave, and we want you to, we're going to be out of here in 2 days. Mid height of the season, I mean, they had 2,000 broilers, 300 cattle, 400 turkeys, they were running this 300-acre farm. And, those are kind of bumps in the road. We came home, and assembled all the interns and apprentices and said, well, here we are. Here's our deal. Of course, they were, it was fun to watch them, you know, come to our defense and how dare they do that to you, not even finish the season, blah, blah, blah. So we said, okay, the problem is we got all this stuff out there. And I mean, to the person, they were just, they couldn't fast enough volunteer to go 1 week cycles and babysit the farm to finish out the season. Boy, I'll tell you what, that is cool. And all of them have come back from their week of stay out there by themselves without seeing anybody for a week. There's basically a camping deal, you know. I mean, you can't even see a house in an hour. Very, very rustic rural location, which ended up being a little bit of the problem of the family that was there. And all of them have come back just beaming about this, being entrusted with this entire responsibility, being able to go swim naked in the river and, you know, and fish and be by themselves, think, meditate, and find out who they were. Wonderful experience. So you know, every season's different, and every you know, internship is a little different in what they do because of just the dynamics of what's going on. We make sure they ride with Richard on deliveries and restaurant deliveries, so they get in the back of the, you know, the kitchens and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, we just love them like family. And of course, you know, you get a bad egg once in a while, but for the most part, they're top notch young people. And of course, we've learned, we've only done the internship now for 4 years, and we've gotten a lot better at selection. The crew we've got this year, no question, the best we've ever had. And they're just dynamite. And I mean, we've had people that own businesses and franchises and stuff, I mean, just business people, come through, and they just watch the crew, and they grab me to the side and they say, where do you get these people? I said, I would hire any of them on the spot. And so we're very blessed. Last year we had roughly 60 applicants for 10 positions. And so we're very, very blessed that way. Another question. Yes, ma'am. Wow, that's a long question. You don't like long questions, do you? All right, well, let's go down the, well, first of all, we own 550 acres, 450 is woods and 100 is open. And then we lease 5 additional farms that total up an additional 1,000 acres of pasture. So we're managing 1,100 acres of pasture, okay? And the whole, you know, if you take all of the truly, by the way, the interns, the apprentices, we do pay workman's comp on them. They are under workman's comp, okay? So the whole kind of paid salaried, true blue salaried people is right at 20 on that 1,100 acre. Now, one of them is Richard, our delivery driver. One of them is Wendy, our phone caller and sales building cashier. One is Jackie, our product manager and accountant. Okay, she's full-time. So those three are all full-time, 30-plus salaried positions, 30,000-plus salaried positions. Do not live on the farm, have their own families, their own houses, blah, blah, blah. Okay, in other words, they reverse the morning rush hour traffic that's running from rural to urban. They're coming the other way, all right? So they're using the other side of the road. So that's 1,100 acres doing that. All right, then, so then production, we'll sell 400 head of beef this year. Let's see, 18 times 50, 900, okay. So say 800 hogs, And by the way, there are a couple of people here, like, for example, we have a former apprentice. The kinds of situations are just amazing. This former apprentice, he was there, and then he went home, and things didn't work out with his family, family issues. So he joined the Marines. I'll just go to the Marines. He'd already been to our place, so boot camp was easy, all right? So he went to the Marines, pulled a four-year hitch in the Marine Air Force, okay? Well, then a family near where he grew up, they've got 5 acres of specialty berries and a commercial kitchen. They make berry stuff and go to about 5 farmers markets in the Northern Virginia area. They make pies and different with a commercial kitchen, right? What was happening was that their neighbors, when these guys went to farmers market, neighbors would come in and pick their fruit. So they approached Jordan and said, they have this big apart, well, not a big apart, it's a one room, but large apart, over the 3-car garage, okay? So it's a up, and said, if you and Laura, he's just gotten married, if you and Laura would come up and live in that apartment, you can live in it free, and in exchange for being our security when we're at farmer's market. You know, what better than to have a former Marine, you know, come and be your security? So that's exactly what they did. Well, the farm's about 180, 200 acres. They had a little herd of cattle and different things. But these people are horticulture people. Okay? Generally, horticulture and animals don't grow on the same body. Generally, you either really like animals or you really like horticulture. You don't see those, I mean, except for maybe a garden or something, but you really don't see those as businesses, which is what's exciting about Dan coming to us with his horticulture thing is we've had customers wanting to buy produce forever, but we have our garden, but we just, there's not enough time in the summer to go around to do produce as well. And so Dan bringing that now, when people come to the sales building, you know, they've got all the, I mean, he's got 20 varieties of tomatoes. I mean, he's got purple ones, yellow ones, red ones, green ones. I mean, it's beautiful. It's this cornucopia. I mean, I would never do that. I just grow Better Boy tomatoes, you know. And so he's brought this tremendous craftsman artisanal thing to the whole produce thing, and now people can buy all this. He's getting his first mushrooms now. Okay, so he went up there to that farm, and within no time at all, suddenly the couple said, "Well, why don't you just take over the beef cattle?" So he took over the beef cattle. Well, so then he wanted to do some sheep, so he got some lambs, started grazing them. Well, another neighbor's driving down the road, and he's watching these lambs in this netting, and he's watching them move along this field. He's so entranced by the beauty of these lambs out here. This guy has a 40-acre bottom land in the bend of a river. I mean, it's the prime number one. You can't get any better land. But he had always vowed, I will never have an animal on my property because they stink, smell, they're not pretty. So he'd just been selling it off every year for neighbors to make hay on. And a guy came over and made hay on it every year just to keep it, you know, from going to brush. Well, he came to Jordan and said, you know what? Your sheep, your lambs are so pretty next to my field. Why don't you just take my 40-acre field and run your lambs in them? So Jordan's running his lambs in his 40-acre field. And then he built a hoop house. Then he bought a bandsaw mill like we have. Now he's milling lumber. He started a furniture business, making rustic. The farm has a bunch of cedar on it. So he's making this rustic cedar furniture that is out of this world, spectacularly beautiful. And they've got these woods, so he's raising 150 hogs for us in the woods, and he takes them right to the slaughterhouse. They weigh them, and we pay him for the pigs, hogs, take off a marketing, you know, deal, and it's, you know, it's dynamite. So you never know what kind of opportunities are going to be there. So that's another, you know, income. I mean, it's hard to just get it all exactly broken down because it's hard for you to wrap your head around all these different things. So a bunch of hogs. And then with all the production, it'll be probably 30,000 to 35,000 broilers. Okay. About 120,000 dozen eggs. 1,000 rabbits. And 1,300 turkeys. That is supposed to add up to almost $2 million worth of income. Now, the rule of thumb in business, in retail business, is $150,000 of product per employee In a retail business, that is a target to shoot for, is $150,000 through the cash register per employee, okay? And so if we have roughly 20 people earning a salary from $2 million, that's $150,000 per. Are you with me? So anyway, we're right there close to that benchmark. So does that answer the question? Are we close enough? All on 1,100 acres. Oh, yeah. And of course, in our area, there's plenty of farmers that have 800 acres, and they're working in town because they can't even support one salary on 800 acres. See, this is why, and the thing that you have to understand here is several people came up to me at a break and said, but your system looks so labor intensive. Listen, what you saw in the slides, you saw everybody. Here's the dirty secret about industrial agriculture. When you see that picture of that big Smithfield confinement hog factory, okay, think about it. It's like that Verizon phone commercial, you know, where the guy's walking down the street and he's got all this big, you know, Verizon company of employees and expertise behind him. What you're seeing when you see that America's farmer feeds 150 people, what you don't see is the Verizon guy with all, you don't see the truck drivers, the salespeople, the graphics artists, the people who gut the chickens, the people who bag the chickens. You don't see all of those people that are handling human resource issues and trucking it, distributing it, cash registering it, and all that. In my slides, you saw all those people, because all those people are on the farm. Those are all costs that are mitigated by an army of people out here behind the industrial farm that you don't see when you see the documentary about how efficient America's farmer is. But that's the truth. See? And you saw everybody on this deal.
We better
quit. I don't even have been watching my watch. I don't have a clue what time it is. Okay, so we've got to quit. You've been wonderful. You've really made me feel welcome in Wyoming. And now may all of your carrots grow long and straight. May your radishes be succulent and non-pithy. May anthracnose not find your bramble fruits. May all of your cakes rise and not fall. May all of your canning jars go and seal. May the coyotes be struck blind at your pastured poultry. May none of your gallbladders pop. Those of you gutted chickens know what I'm talking about. May the rain fall gently at your back and the wind be always behind you, and may your children rise up and call you blessed. May we all vow to make a planet and a world that's better than the one we inherited. Thank you all so much. Blessings on you. Thank you for letting me visit you. Thank you.